week's edition of World Crisis Radio. I'm your host here, Webster Tarpley, in Washington. And the big story this week is the deepening world economic and financial depression. It is the Bush World Economic Depression, brought to you by the deregulators and privatizers of the Austrian School and the Chicago School, who made possible the derivatives bubble of $1.5 quadrillion, the abolition of the firewall between banks and stock jobbers by getting rid of the Glass-Steagall Act with the complicity of Clinton, to be sure, and privatizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac when they were government agencies. The litany of deregulation, privatization, anti-big government has created an unprecedented world economic depression. Now, this week, we've been listening to the windbag Rush Limbaugh on the radio, and Rush really doesn't believe that there is a depression, and that is one of the general tendencies of reactionary opinion. The free marketeer boys don't like the idea that their much beloved free market, and it's been pretty freed up over the last 40 years of reactionary Republican rule and namby-pamby Democratic rule, such as Carter, who was a disaster, of course, and Clinton, who was not much better. They don't like the idea that their free market has pitched into a bubble, a tremendous casino economy asset bubble, and it's now coming down. The big story is, of course, that we're inhabiting the inside of a collapsing bubble, and all of the cliches and nostrums that are being dished up about free market, or you'll hear it. Prosperity is just around the corner, says Limbaugh. Don't do anything, because the recovery is on the way. Prosperity is just around the corner, said Herbert Hoover in 1930, and nothing happened. And prosperity is just around the corner, said Herbert Hoover in 1931, and did virtually nothing. 1932, same story. Prosperity still just around the corner, but no recovery, and lots of people dying, starving, freezing, living under bridges. So it's the wrong approach. There is a depression. Man, oh, man, is there a depression. And there's no guarantee that there's going to be a recovery in 2009 or 2010. Quite the contrary. If you were to guarantee something, you'd guarantee that there won't be a recovery, given the present bankrupt direction of policy. As long as you're piping money into banks and finance oligarchs and derivative swindlers, there will be no recovery. This is a bottomless pit. There is no bottom in the stock market. There is no plateau at which things magically stabilize. People, of course, are being completely disoriented by the business cycle theory pioneered by von Mises, von Hayek, and the other charlatans and quacks of the Austrian school. So this is not guaranteed. And, of course, when Herbert Hoover and Rush Limbaugh today say prosperity is just around the corner, what they mean is don't do anything. Don't fight the depression. Well, I think the average person thinks the U.S. government ought to fight the depression. Don't just lie there and let the depression wash over you and say, well, this is just how it is in the eternal struggle of yin and yang, because that's what a lot of this stuff is. A lot of your monetarist economics is really a jazzed-up version of Taoism and quite bankrupt. So don't let the depression wash over you. Fight it, and you can fight it. And New Deal methods have shown that they can fight it and defeat it. All kinds of mythology sprouting out of Limbaugh and other monetarists on this issue. But let's look at the reality of the depression. Now, we're taping the program here on the 30th of January. So this morning, we've had the gross domestic product for the United States in the fourth quarter of 08. Here we see that the gross domestic product, and we'll have to have some strictures on what that means, has been shrinking at the rate of 3.8%, almost 4% per year in the fourth quarter of 2008. So October, November, December of 08, the year just ended, shrinkage of the gross domestic product by 4%. Now that's bad. It's probably the worst since the Carter aftermath, since the Volcker Depression of 1979 to 1984, out of which came, of course, a big asset bubble, and we've never really quieted down since then. That was the transition, of course, from Volcker to Greenspan in 1987. So this is already bad enough. Now, much less in the news, but I think rather more important. The Department of Labor has a very interesting website, which you can see, and it is the mass layoffs statistics. When you are in a violent contraction of production and employment, as we are now, you want to look at the Department of Labor mass layoffs statistics. And here we find the following interesting things. During the month of January, 188,000 jobs have been destroyed already, and the month is not even over yet. 60,000 jobs were destroyed last Monday alone. So we're pushing 200,000 jobs in January. Now, that would actually be better than November, December, when we got up to 500,000 jobs. But, of course, a couple of more days like this past Monday, and we will meet or surpass the 500,000 jobs lost in November and December of 2008. This is a depression. This is a world economic depression of incalculable intensity, of incalculable proportions. It is a genocidal depression. Fight it now, because it will kill, and it will keep on killing. Economics kills more than war. There's no doubt about it. Ask Robert McNamara, where could you kill the most, at the World Bank IMF or at the Pentagon? At the World Bank IMF, of course. There's no contest. Economic warfare is the most effective warfare when it comes to killing. So 60,000 jobs lost on one day, last Monday. January 09, 188,000 jobs lost. Let's look back to 2008. Here we find that 2.6 million jobs were annihilated, 2.6 million jobs in 1 year. And at the center of this, there were 21,000 mass layoff events. In other words, 21,000 instances in which a company laid off some plural number of people. I don't know what the limit is on what makes a mass layoff, whether it takes 5 or 10 or 100 or whatever it takes. But mass layoffs accounted for 21,000 incidents and 2.6 million jobs destroyed. In the course of the year, 2.13 million people applied for unemployment benefits the first time around. In the month of December, we find that there were 226,000 jobs lost through such mass layoffs. So this is unquestionably one of the most severe contractions that we've had. And, of course, this is just the beginning. This is not the bottom of the Depression. This is not 1933. This is it's early in 1930. We've just had the crash of 1929. We had Bear Stearns last March. Then we had Lehman Brothers in September, AIG in September. We've had various banks blowing up. But by and large, we're just in the beginning of this process. With the Depression has only begun to hit. And, of course, what we're headed for is, I believe, a period of hyperinflation and a period of death agony of the U.S. dollar. Remember, once again, if you think that the crash of 1929 on Wall Street was the big event of the last Depression, you are wrong. This is completely disoriented. The main event was the bankruptcy of the British pound, the Bank of England default on gold payment, September 1931. That's what destroyed the world monetary system. That's the main event, and that is still ahead. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is your host, Webster Tarpley, in Washington, D.C. And as usual, I want to call your attention to my current books. That is to say, Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, and Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. These available at Amazon.com. Publication now in the first months of this year for Surviving the Cataclysm, Your Guide Through the Worst Financial Crisis in Human History, first edition 1999, and now a second edition brought up to date with a whole bunch of new material, Surviving the Cataclysm. If you're interested in that, send an email to info@progressivepress.com, as in information, info@progressivepress.com. The German edition of Obama the Postmodern Coup doing quite well. The Japanese version doing extraordinarily well. A lot of people out there in the world want to get the lowdown on Barkey, and I am glad to give it to them. If you happen to be listening in Pakistan, you've got to listen to Sama Television. The program of Ibrahim Malik is going to have me on there fairly soon. And this past week, I was also on KPFK Los Angeles talking to Roseanne Barr and her friend Johnny, who have got a program there at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Wednesday afternoon, I think it was, local time. So you can be sitting in that huge parking lot on the freeways and at least get some briefing elements. So Roseanne Barr, also quite interesting, obviously hates Bush, quite understandable, and very, very mistrustful of Obama. And I think that's a healthy combination to begin with. What you can't get away with is the hate Bush so much that you're blinded and gaga for Barkey. Gaga for Barkey is not viable, and we're going to see why here. We've also got the Davos meeting of the Masters of Human Destiny. The finance oligarchs of the world, as usual, are meeting on the Magic Mountain, auf dem Zauberberg, as Thomas Mann had it in his interesting pre-World War I novel. Hans Kastorp is now the director of the Deutsche Bank, and they're all bankrupt, of course. So this entire group of bankrupt finance oligarchs, the derivatives peddlers sitting on top of this castle of 1.5 quadrillion of derivatives, are now up there in Davos having their confab, and we talked about who's not going and who's going. Jamie Dimon is there of Citibank. Yeah, I wonder whether he flew his corporate jet. Jamie Dimon, somebody who ought to be up the river in Assening or Leavenworth or someplace like this. But right now he's cavorting in Davos, and he says that the cocktail parties are just part of human nature. Valerie Jarrett, of course, representing the United States. Do you feel well represented by Valerie Jarrett, the Lady Resco, the expert in graft, corruption, and skimming money out of the Chicago city budget the way old Tony Resco did? Because whatever Resco did, I guarantee you Valerie Jarrett did it, and she's now a highly respected advisor to Barkey in the White House. So we've got all these things going on. Now, the we want to talk about the stimulus, but first let's remind ourselves, what is Obama's method? How is Obama different from Bush? Remember, Bush is an open reactionary, he's an in-your-face imperialist, and he's an aggressor, and he wants to talk tough like an aggressor, right? His slogans were things like, bring it on, wanted dead or alive, right? All this idiotic rhetoric, of course, bin Laden, al-Qaeda, the war on terror, all these mythological references. It is true, of course, that Bush's blatant brutality and vulgarity and cynicism were all right out in the open for everybody to see. This is why, ultimately, he was not able to get very far in a lot of his efforts and has left his political following in such disarray. Now, Obama is the opposite. Obama is slippery, shifty, slimy. With Obama, everything is based on deception, trickery, dissembling. The goal is to dupe the public. It is to gull you while you're being flayed alive. Just a couple of examples. Obama's gestures, where what we've got is a series of
I can call it the Obama two-step. He feints to the left and makes a massive move towards either military aggression and genocide or the fascist corporate state at home. Best example, Guantanamo Bay. Okay, the Guantanamo Bay concentration camp. Tremendous crime against humanity, tremendous embarrassment for the U.S. So he's gonna shut that down. All right, wonderful. So these characters now go to other prisons, right? The CIA black sites that have existed in certain countries will be shut down, and I'm sure other ones will take their place. This is simply cosmetic. This is window dressing. This is fakery. This is designed to dupe you. And while the order to shut down Guantanamo is being signed in the White House, the CIA predator drones carry on their deadly work in northwest Pakistan, killing people, mercilessly slaughtering civilians. If you're in a wedding party, they're going to come and kill you. If you're in a peaceful village, they're going to kill you. Shepherds out in the open, kids sitting in an apple tree, along comes the CIA predator drone, and it's kill, kill, kill. Barkey didn't hit the ground running. Barkey hit the ground killing when it came to his first week in office. We're told that Obama has recorded a conciliatory message for the Arab and Islamic world, and he put it out on Al Arabiya. Hey, wait a minute. The first message was not delivered by Al Arabiya. The first message was a deadly message, packages of mortiferous death being delivered by the CIA predator drones in northwest Pakistan. That's the message that counts. That's the biledou from Obama, from Barkey, to the Arab and Islamic world, not some verbiage in Al Arabiya. Get the idea? A throwaway line, a little gesture, a little feint to the left, and then massive commitment of resources to military aggression, genocidal killing, the fascist corporate state. And so it is, of course, with the so-called stimulus. And this, again, is where you've got to have some common sense. And if you're going to stand around and say, oh, I don't like any stimulus, porculus here, stimulus there, I don't like it, shouldn't be done, violates the Constitution, this is just a joke. This is a bad joke. And you will be cutting yourself out of history. Nobody's going to listen to you. Try selling that line to somebody standing on a breadline like these 2.6 million people thrown out of their jobs in 2008, most of them still unemployed and growing in numbers. You've got to be able to discriminate. The government should fight the depression. But, of course, what fights the depression? Let's tell you what does not fight the depression. Obviously, giving millions and billions to Acorn doesn't fight the depression. That helps to build up a domestic structure for the fascist corporate state. And above all, gangrene jobs, the gangrene economy, doesn't help. No money for that. And we'll develop this when we come back.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Washington, D.C. Don't forget Obama, the postmodern coup, the making of a Manchurian candidate, and the distinguished presidential biography, Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography with Rezko, Jeremiah Wright, Bill Ayers, Bernadine Dorn, Michelle, and Zbigniew Brzezinski all on the cover. Now, let's look at Obama's method as applied to the general approach to economics. Take Citibank. Citibank, of course, is the Robert Rubin clique. This is Robert Rubin, who has successfully destroyed the stock price of Citibank, drove it down to less than $3. It's now hovering just above $3. But this institution is bankrupt. It's gone. Finish. Kaput. Citibank is gone, but the Citibank cabal, the clique, lives on, because this is largely what's running
the government, Robert Rubin and his proteges, Larry Summers and Tim Geithner, and the Eminence Grise, the Gray Eminence, Paul Adolf Volcker. That's what's running economic policy. The Goldman Sachs Citibank crew. Remember also the Tom Daschle, Secretary of Health and Human Services, who's going to take your pension away. He's going to destroy your Social Security and your Medicare. And he's going to send the money to who he works for, Citibank. The senator from Citibank, the biggest employer in South Dakota. You wouldn't believe it, but the credit card operation of Citibank in South Dakota is the biggest employer in the state, and that's Tom Daschle. He is a Malthusian bureaucrat. He is coming after you. He wants to take away your pension, take away your health care, and leave you nothing but your eyes to cry with. And the death count, the body count from Daschle's service to Citibank is going up, up, up. Oh, and of course, let's remember, Barkey has just appointed Joe Biden to be the middle-class monitor, the middle-class task force of the Obama regime. Who's Joe Biden again? He represents MBNA credit card gouging enterprises. The usurious and exorbitant interest rates on MBNA credit cards are out of this world, OOTW. And that's Biden. He's also the co-author of the bankruptcy bill of 2005, which makes it almost impossible this side of the great beyond to get rid of credit card debt. Used to be much easier. Right now, when people need to get back on their feet after an orgy of lending, it would be time to shift some of the burden of that onto the credit card companies that were sending out credit cards to anybody they had on their mailing list. No, can't be done because Joe Biden is defending the interests of those credit card usurious gouging companies all based in Delaware. So he's going to look after the middle class. The fox is guarding the chicken coop with Joe Biden. But now let's look at Citibank. Citibank had ordered a corporate jet of the most modern and elegant type with leather seats, we're told, in 2005. Now, this is the typical demagogy of the mass media. Remember, the issue involved with money is not the individual living standards of these financial parasites. It's of some importance, but ultimately, this doesn't matter. The importance of what they do, the crime of what they do, is not what they spend on themselves, but how they misallocate and destroy the social surplus of the society as a whole. And in particular, their biggest crime is not the corporate jet. That's peanuts. It's chicken feed. It's insignificant. It's the 1.5 quadrillion, 1.5 thousand trillion of derivatives, credit default swaps, structured investment vehicles, auction rate securities, collateralized debt obligations, mortgage-backed securities, asset-backed securities, options of all sorts, and so on. They have inflicted that on the world. That is the cancer that is sucking the vitality out of the world economy. That's the problem with these guys, not just their vulgar, bombastic spending and that of their families and so forth. So now we have Obama sitting in the Oval Office saying, oh, I'm indignant that Citibank wanted to buy this corporate jet. And we're told that Geithner, or one of Geithner's hacks and henchmen at the Treasury, called up Citibank and said, boys, nix the corporate jet, nix the corporate jet. Now, this is a case study in demagogic propaganda, duping the masses, pulling the wool over your eyes. The first question, of course, let's actually do this in the following way. Let's do the right-wing critique as offered by Limbaugh, and then I'll offer a reasonable New Deal critique, and you see which is more powerful critique. The right-wing critique says, Obama, how dare you interfere in the private sector? Citibank has got to be able to do what they want. If they want to give $20 billion in bonuses after getting that $20 billion from the taxpayers, that's up to them. They're the private sector. They know what to do. Stop with the class warfare. Let them do what they have to do. They've got to get these wonderful, talented, genius quants and others to work for them, and they've got to give them the perks that they're accustomed to, and so forth. So the right-wing critique is basically huffy, huffy, huffy that Barkey is interfering in the private sector.
Let them give multi-billion dollar bonuses. Remember, those poor guys get the 25 to 50% of their yearly compensation, right? Don't ask what the compensation is. And if you're unemployed, don't ask what the compensation is. But you get the idea. The right-wing critique essentially says the private sector is sacrosanct. The greed and the grasping of these hyenas, jackals, predators, raptors, ticks, and leeches is sacrosanct. Don't you dare touch it. So I think that's an impotent critique. I think that's a loser. It's also morally insane and economically wrong in today's world. Now, this would be a reasonable New Deal critique. It would be, first of all, to the facts. Barkey, if you didn't want Citibank to be able to have corporate jets, and if you didn't want Citibank and AIG and so forth to give multi-billion dollar handouts in bonuses to your predators and quants and other sociopathic individuals who work there, why did you vote for the TARP? Why did you vote for the bailout once in October and then once later on? Not only, Barkey, did you vote for it, you organized the majorities both times. It was your phone calls, Barkey, to the Black Caucus in particular and to other members of the Democratic House membership that got the majority for the bailout to go through the first time in early October. And secondly, in the last week of the old year, it was you, Barkey, who got the TARP, the second tranche of the bailout, approved, and you suppressed all of the opposition to that. It's actually the last week of Mad Dog Bush Jr.'s presidential term. So the bailout as it is Barkey's baby. It's not Bush anymore. Bush proposed it. Paulson proposed it. But without Barkey, it could not have gotten through the House in October, and it would not have gotten through the Congress in general in the week before the inauguration. And remember, Barkey wanted that done. He wanted that done so he would not look like being the guy responsible. Now, the first question, therefore, why did you vote for it? The second question, what are you going to do about it? Hey, you're president now. You don't have to go on television and say it's irresponsible. Start writing executive orders. Start saying, okay, anybody who got money off this bailout, you're going to cut the corporate jets and you're going to wipe out bonuses. No bonuses. You can also say, let's claw back some of the bonuses, right? Let's send the FBI and the Treasury men. Let's send the T-men to go after the people at Citibank, like Bullet Bob Rubin, who got this money, and get some of it back for the people. No sign of that. And then, Barkey, what are you hiding? Well, here's what he's hiding. Notice when Barkey attacked Citibank, he said, this is irresponsible. You've got to be responsible. Stop being irresponsible. There's this thesis that he's working as a hypnotist, right, that Barkey is actually practicing mass hypnotism, a kind of modern Cagliostro. It may well be. We'll be back in a minute with why. Back to World Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpley in Washington, D.C. So let's look at the Obama two-step, a small gesture towards some form of human New Deal economics, and then the massive commitment of resources to Wall Street, the hyenas, jackals, predators, raptors, and ticks of the financial community. So with Citibank gets a rap on the knuckles with Barkey's ferule because of the corporate jet and because of billions in bloated bonuses to characters like Rubin and his ilk over there, Pandit the Bandit, the head of the company. But what is being prepared? Oh, Barkey is building up left cover. Barkey is building up left cover with his Guantanamo closing order. He's building up some left cover with this stuff on Citibank. He also, today, Barkey signed some executive orders on trade unions, which in themselves are fine. They're very, very minor. They say, for example, if you're an employer working on a federal contract, you can't try to use publicity and intimidation to block
the people who work for you from choosing to join a union and have collective bargaining. You can't spend that money to block the union and then bill the government for that as an expense. So that's what Barkey did. In effect, some of the most outrageous, reactionary, union-busting, wage-gouging, bureaucratic, authoritarian, police state stuff from the Bush gang in the area of labor relations can be jettisoned. This is not Barkey's model. Remember, Barkey is aiming at bigger things. Barkey wants to bust the United Auto Workers, and above all, he wants to bust the American Federation of Teachers. But floating above this, let's not forget what Barkey told the editorial board of the Washington Post on the Thursday before his inauguration. And this, of course, was that he is going to do entitlement reform, that the current rates of expenditure for Social Security and especially Medicare and their planned growth is unsustainable, and that he will bring in a regime of responsibility, duty, and sacrifice. Sacrifice is the key word. Now, Barkey backed off sacrifice in the State of the Union. It was a dismal speech. It was a real insult to the poor schmoes who bought into the hope and change mantra. But he's talking responsibility. He got the responsibility stuff into the State of the Union. And now he's trying to popularize the term responsibility. Why? Because he's preparing the grand felony of all time, the robbing and looting of Social Security, piping all the money into the pockets of Soros, Rockefeller, and Goldman Sachs. It's estimated that we've just had the $700 billion in the original bailout, right, the so-called TARP. Right now we've got $820 billion on the table for the stimulus. Everybody now thinks that it's going to be something like a trillion more only for the banks, only for Wall Street. So the people at the bottom get the crumbs, and Wall Street gets the big bucks. And that's, I think, what's going to happen. Now, here's the big thing. George F. Will the Shill, column in the Washington Post, January 25th, this past Sunday. Grand yes, bargain no. Days before becoming responsible in the eyes of the public for almost everything, Barack Obama vowed to convene a fiscal responsibility summit. This is pretty much the Washington Post editorial board interview. Fiscal responsibility summit. It will consider the economy's long-term problems, one of which is the growing cost of entitlements in an aging nation that is caught in the tightening grip of the iron law of welfare states. Graying means paying, writes Will the Shill. Presumably, the president's summit will help chart a path towards what has been called a grand bargain. This big bang will aim to create a new universe of domestic policy by making, among other things, the entitlement menu, and especially Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, which is more than 40% of federal spending, making all that manageable. Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid has to become manageable. Now, does that mean the urgent need to increase the Social Security pension and to increase Medicare benefits? Because the old people of today will not have a 401k. They're gone. These paper values are plummeting. By next year, you'll see. It's already 40, 50% gone. A lot more will go. Or does it mean beefing up Medicare because private medical insurance will increasingly go bankrupt like AIG because of their dabbling in derivatives? Somehow, George F. Will the Shill, is not talking about that when he says manageable. Obama, he writes, spoke of his summit a day after the House of Representatives talked about increasing benefits. And Will the Shill here is attacking SCHIP, State Children's Health Initiative Insurance Program. Now, Will the Shill, of course, spokesman for the Legions of Greed, the Pluto set. He doesn't like the S-CHIP. He doesn't think that poor children should get health insurance, because that violates the free market, of course. George Will, we can imagine, has got his copy of von Hayek and von Mises and Milton Friedman on his bedside table. He probably reads them every night. He may organize devotions in the household around these things. But this is precisely the idea. There's going to be a fiscal responsibility summit convened by Barkey. And the goal of this is to do what Bush tried to do and could not do, to loot Social Security, to loot Medicare, and to loot Medicaid, even though some of the money in the current the stimulus actually goes to Medicaid. They're going to try to squeeze it out over the long run. Now, again, you've got to have sophisticated, realistic criteria of distinguishing. Don't attack the window dressing that Barkey puts in there. Barkey puts in things that are good. They're 100% good. As a matter of fact, they should be multiplied by 10. The current stimulus apparently has increased funding for food stamps. We want it, and we want 10 times more. Increased unemployment insurance benefits to the states. We want that, and we want 10 times more. Cash infusion into state Medicaid programs for medical assistance to poor people, growing in number. We want that, and we want 10 times more. How about infrastructure? I think that they're talking about something like $30 to $40 billion of infrastructure. We want that, and we want 10 times more. Public education, sure. We want that and 10 times more. What we don't want, no more payments to bankers. No more money for J.P. Morgan Chase. No more money for Citibank. No more money for Bank of America. No more money for Bank of New York Mellon, and so on down the line. Wells Fargo also. Nix. No money. Not one penny for bankers. Not one penny for the derivatives bubble. Not one penny for the futile attempt to prop up bloated, cancerous, fictitious, paper, speculative values. It's hopeless. You can't prop them up. They're coming down. They're coming down, down, down. This is the biggest bubble of all time, and it is now coming down on your head. So the point is, you've got to have a criterion of distinguishing what is productive and what is parasitical, what in particular is predatory. And the general idea is that industrial and agricultural production, along with necessary services to keep people alive, like medical care, those are the things that the money should go into. And in particular, it should go to the state budgets to maintain the fire departments, the police departments, the public hospitals, schools, and this, the tissue of civilization, but not one penny for bankers. This is a big problem. Obama's giving, we can do a calculation, probably 90% of the money to bankers, and he's using the other 10% as window dressing. Back in a minute.
Are you ready for a world of challenge, of possibilities, of ambiguity and adventure? Be a part of the National Clandestine Service at the Central Intelligence Agency. Are you a person of purpose, professionalism, with a strong sense of patriotism? Make a world of difference as a CIA officer with the National Clandestine Service. Learn more at CIA.gov. The work of a nation, the center of intelligence. Equal opportunity employer. U.S. citizenship required.
Tarpley in Washington, D.C., calling your kind attention once again to my most recent books, Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, with the history of the Carter regime, which is the best guide to what's happening right now, and Obama, the Unauthorized Biography. Get them both at Amazon.com. You go to Amazon, they give you free shipping, I think. They give you Super Saver. They give you a discount if you buy them both. And with doing that, you will support the existence of an opposition against the Obama regime. Now, in terms of this stimulus, the loudmouth Limbaugh has been sounding off about this. And since he's obviously a spokesman for the free market gang, the privateers, as we call them, let's try to address some of his critique. He says, well, this is wrong. The main argument I think he has is that prosperity is just around the corner. As Herbert Hoover put it during 1930, 31, and 32, prosperity is just around the corner, says Limbaugh, and therefore don't do anything, because anything you do will be too late. We're basically in an Austrian school business cycle, and we're going to have the crash, and we should let creative destruction run its course. Don't you dare interfere with the Depression. The Depression is sacrosanct. Don't you dare interfere with it. Let it go on. Let it essentially destroy a generation of people. Right? Everybody who's in school will be out working at minimum wage jobs. Don't worry about that. That's creative destruction. We don't care about that. Then there will be a recovery, and won't it be great? We can start a new bubble when the recovery is over. This, of course, is the creative destruction doctrine of Joseph Schumpeter. It is the Andrew Mellon School of Economics. Just to point this out, Andrew Mellon, the tax cheat, the predecessor of Geithner in that department, Andrew Mellon, tax evader, because he didn't think rich people should have to pay. That was his view, and he was crusty enough as an oligarch to say so. Andrew Mellon, friend of fascists, and, fascist himself, Andrew Mellon was the Secretary of the Treasury for Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover, the reactionary Republicans elected in 1920, 1924, and 1928. Those three presidents, Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover, served under Andrew Mellon, and he, of course, was a brutal, vicious monetarist, and his famous slogan, liquidate stocks, liquidate bonds, liquidate real estate, liquidate labor, liquidate everything, meaning let it all come down, don't do anything, and then we'll have a period of creative destruction, and then we get on with it. Now, this is what Limbaugh also believes. So he's telling you, he's preparing the argument that anything you do will prevent the automatic recovery, which is looked for by monetarist Austrian theory. And, of course, this is completely fatuous. This is the kind of thinking that made Herbert Hoover what he was. But now let's remember, in terms of that map from the 1930s, Obama is Herbert Hoover. Obama is Herbert Hoover. He's not Franklin D. Roosevelt. Don't fall for this propaganda. This is a cynical effort by the Roosevelt haters. You go back to the 1930s, you'll see that Time magazine, Henry Luce, they hated Roosevelt. That was their stock in trade. Henry Luce of Skull and Bones hated Roosevelt. And Eugene Meyer, the creation of the creator of the Washington Post, which now owns Newsweek, hated Roosevelt. He left the Federal Reserve when Roosevelt terminated the gold standard, which at that point was the exact right thing to do, because the British were using the gold standard to strangle everybody else in the world except themselves. Eugene Meyer quit the Federal Reserve, came to Washington, bought a newspaper, and said, I'm going to create a propaganda organ that will fight Roosevelt and fight the New Deal. So Obama is Herbert Hoover. Limbaugh and the monetarist opposition, the people who say no stimulus, don't do anything, let the Depression take its course, that's the Andrew Mellon Party. So the Andrew Mellon Party is fighting the Herbert Hoover Party. The problem that we have in this country right now is that there is no well-organized, visible force for the New Deal in terms of economics. And that would mean a comprehensive look back at, and a critical evaluation, to be sure, of the New Deal. And therefore, we have Limbaugh is going around saying, oh, Roosevelt's measures prolonged the Depression. Absolute insanity. That's the kind of thinking that made Herbert Hoover the most hated president of the 20th century, bar none. Except, well, Carter gave him a run for his money, but other than that, it's Herbert Hoover. That only the war ended the Depression. Hey, today we have two wars and a Depression. How could Bush manage that?
If wars ended depression, you wouldn't have a depression today because you've got two wars. This is simply wrong. War by itself does not end a depression. War can actually make a depression worse. What ended the war, of course, was lend-lease. What ended the depression with the onset of the war was lend-lease, which allowed Roosevelt for the first time since the very beginning, when he didn't know quite what to do it, whether we could do it in this way. Lend-lease is the measure that harnesses the credit system to defense production and produces a broad-based recovery. Now, since we know all this, we've studied the New Deal retrospectively, we can tell you that what would work today to end the Depression, stop the Depression in its tracks, and end it in a period of months, is a return to lend-lease for the home front, not using federal spending, but using federal lending. Seize the Federal Reserve. Seize the Federal Reserve, nationalize it, issue $1 trillion for production only. That goes into industry, agriculture, infrastructure, and all the other productive and socially necessary activities, not financial services, not money laundering, not gambling, not narcotics, prostitution, pornography, other areas that some think are essential for liberty, the libertines, I guess we can call them, not what the libertines say. That's the story. So what we have, therefore, is Limbaugh preaching the Andrew Mellon school against Obama, who is nothing but Herbert Hoover. And again, the Herbert Hoover that's active now is the Reconstruction Finance Corporation. After doing nothing for about 1.5 years as the Depression got worse, Herbert Hoover finally said, oh, all right, I'll put aside my free market scruples and we'll have the Reconstruction Finance Corporation and I'll give them $3 billion, the equivalent of 1 year's federal budget at that time. So today, $1.5 trillion, and I'm going to pump that into the banking system. When I see banks that are about to fail, I'll prop them up with the Reconstruction Finance Corporation. And of course, it failed. They all went bankrupt. They all closed down. Every one of them insolvent by March of 1933. So the big problem is we need somebody to represent the New Deal. I'm trying to do it here. But clearly, Limbaugh is preaching the old Herbert Hoover, prosperity is right around the corner. Limbaugh also thinks tax cuts are everything. This is the old cynical Reagan ploy to deprive government of resources so that you can destroy it, right? Let it wither on the vine. They want to have a payroll tax holiday. That will help them to destroy Social Security later on. They want to have lift the capital gains tax. Again, this is a bonanza for speculators and rich plutocrats, wealthy elitists. They're always the beneficiaries of these crazy things, right? Notice that when Limbaugh talks about William F. Buckley, he talks about him as Mr. Buckley. Well, that guy, William F. Buckley of the National Review, along with Vernon Taxis and Habsburg, was a supporter of the Mount Pelerin Society. Mount Pelerin Society. Put that on your list with Bilderberg, Trilateral CFR. Those are the people where we had von Hayek and Mises and Milton Friedman, and that's the plague that helped to cause this depression. We don't need more of it. We need less. Back in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Prosperity just around the corner, the old discredited Herbert Hoover litany. And, of course, we're always told a new bottom is in sight. Now stocks have bottomed. Now it's time to start buying. Don't believe it. Don't go into it. Let's also remember when we hear Limbaugh, he's always saying, well, the founding fathers and our constitutional commitment to the free market system. Baloney. That's not how it happened.
Again, look at people like John Winthrop, Massachusetts Bay Colony, 1630s, dirigist, protectionist, mercantilist, Cameralist, not a free marketeer in any sense, mainly trying to get industry going against the economic warfare of the British. Look at Benjamin Franklin, a Leibnizian dirigist, the founder of the post office, which became a government operation, not some private. Look at U.S. history. Who builds the big things? And this is what we've got to think about now. If you want to have a recovery now, you've got to have a transcontinental magnetic levitation railway system. You've got to build fast, modern, attractive mass transit, urban mass transit in all the large cities, some of which have nothing. Try Houston or Dallas for places that have basically nothing. New York has something, but it's 100 years old and it's falling down, right? Los Angeles is trying. Chicago has a system, also quite decrepit. But let's just look at it historically. The Erie Canal, okay? So you can go from the Hudson at Albany across to Lake Erie, over to Chicago, down the Mississippi. Built by government, built by the state of New York under DeWitt Clinton, the Erie Canal. One of the first ones. Then you can add the Illinois-Michigan Canal that gets you from Lake Michigan to the Illinois River. This is why New York is the city that it is where it is, because that's where you get into the Erie Canal system. And Chicago is where it is because that's where you get from the Erie Canal Great Lakes system into the Mississippi-Missouri complex. So the Erie Canal built by government. How about the Transcontinental Railway? Built by government, built by Abraham Lincoln, starting as a war measure during the Civil War to unite the country and prevent secession of California and other places that the British were eager to detach, along with the Transcontinental Railroad, of course, under the Morrill Act, the land-grant colleges, basically everybody's state university along the way, built by government based on the proceeds from the land sections that were then awarded to the railways, but also to the state governments along the way. Hey, all the patriots love the Panama Canal, built by government. Theodore Roosevelt let his hair down, and when you needed to do it, you couldn't rely on J.P. Morgan. You have to go and do it yourself. The greatest complex of hydroelectric production in the world at the time, Tennessee Valley Authority. All those hydroelectric dams, as much electricity as all of Germany, the entire Deutsches Reich, had less electricity than the Tennessee Valley Authority alone, built by government, a New Deal program of Franklin D. Roosevelt. The cracking of the atom and the first atomic pile, Stagg Field, University of Chicago, Enrico Fermi, done by government. Nuclear energy is a government program, New Deal, National Aeronautics Space Administration, first U.S. satellites, and then, as far as we know, putting human beings on the moon, done by government, the Internet, created by government, the whole computer microchip economy is essentially a spinoff of NASA. And the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. We had the shameless ideologue, just about as bad as Limbaugh, Neil Cavuto of Fox Business News, comes on telling Hannity one afternoon this past week, oh, the Internet was built by good people, by good folks who wanted to build something. Wrong, Neil. Built by Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, and therefore by government. Do you get the picture? If you want to do the big stuff, it would be nice if private enterprise would do these things, but the fact is they don't. And rather than wait until the Greek Kalends or until hell freezes over for some hedge fund hyena to get the idea of building a transcontinental maglev railway or going into space, who's going to put the first city an industrial city on the moon? Who's going to put the first industrial city on Mars? You think J.P. Morgan Chase is going to do that? No, they've got too many derivatives. They never do it. It's going to be government. All of this idiotic mythology that space is going to be privatized out the window. So knowing all this, if you want to have a stimulus package that gets you somewhere,
It's got to make a change in the lives of people. In other words, artifacts, things of permanent value that would pass into the possession of the American people as a whole and make life easier. I can give you the lowdown here in Washington, D.C. Build the rail line from the West Falls Church metro stop all the way out to Dulles Airport and Vienna, from Vienna to Vienna, Virginia, to Dulles Airport. So all those people in Fairfax County can take the subway to work rather than sitting in cars on Route 66 and Route 7, which is a nightmare. The other one, of course, is build the Purple Line, build the Circle Line around the outside of Washington, D.C. You'd probably want to build a rail line that would get you to BWI Airport. In other words, build the great works of infrastructure. Most obvious, build a magnetic levitation high-speed railroad from Richmond, Virginia, to Boston, Massachusetts, and Bangor, Maine. Maglev, build one from Los Angeles to San Diego. Build one from Chicago to Detroit to Cleveland. And while you're at it, of course, build the big one, New York to San Francisco, with ramifications along the way. Magnetic levitation, high-speed rail. Rebuild the urban mass transit systems. That's stimulus. Build 100 nuclear reactors. And, of course, if the porculus has money for scientific research, great, we want it, and we want it increased by a factor of 10. Research into any kind of biomedical research, we need it. Who's going to keep those labs going? Do you want to live, or are you going to die for the greater glory of von Hayek, von Mises, and von Friedman, of all of these foreign economic schools, so alien and foreign to the American system, which is so inherently superior? Why would an American want to go abroad to these noxious foreign doctrines when you have the greatest school of political economy right here? It's the Hamiltonian, Lincoln, Morrill, New Deal, JFK school, and at the center of it is national banking, right? Nationalize the Federal Reserve and put it to good use. So that's the guide to the fight. Now, we'll be looking at the fight as it unfolds. Got to go to the Senate, got to go back to the conference committee. But that's the idea. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Now, I hope everybody gets a chance to go to your supermarket checkout aisle this week. The Globe cover story, Obama, what Obama's hiding from America, 8 shocking secrets will wreck the new president. This is on sale until February 2nd. So when you go this weekend, get The Globe, what Obama's hiding from America, the 8 questions. First of all, let's see. Where were you really born? What is your real name? First, one, where were you born? Two, where is your what's your real name? Three, are you secretly a Muslim? And that, of course, just means whatever religion you are, you should say what you are. Be an atheist. Be whatever you want. Be a Wiccan. But tell the people what you are and don't lie. Why did you have your records at Columbia University sealed is number 4. Number 5, why did you travel to trouble-torn Pakistan on an Indonesian passport at the age of 20? 6, did you cheat on your wife, Michelle, with both a man and a woman? 7, when did you stop using drugs? And 8, where are you connected to the shooting death of Donald Young? Now, the questions 6 and 8 cite the reports of Larry Sinclair, but number 2 and number 5 cite our guest, Philip Berg. We're told under what is your real name, former Deputy Attorney General of Pennsylvania Philip J. Berg claims that Obama lied to the Illinois Supreme Court when he filled in a registration form to get admitted to the bar. He put down, when they asked him, what were your aliases in the past, he said, none, no former name. He lied. Why did he lie? Number 5, we get Phil Berg again. Retired Pennsylvania Attorney General Phil Berg says that in 1981, you couldn't go on a U.S. passport, and therefore
This is another problem. Berg says that Obama's conduct could have voided his U.S. citizenship. So, Phil Berg, welcome. You can see that your fame is growing by land and sea here in the globe on everybody's supermarket checkout aisle. You're one of the stars.
Well, it's a shame that I have to be a star. It's a shame that I have to be involved in this at this point. It's a shame that Barack Obama, who said his administration, if elected, and now that he is sworn in as president, was to be so transparent. How transparent is it if we know absolutely nothing about this person? We know nothing about his background. All his records are sealed. And I think it's a total disgrace. We have a president in now whose name is probably still Barry Soturo. That's his adopted name in Indonesia, if he never legally changed his name after that. We have a usurper there. We have someone in office who does not belong in office. And therefore, every law he's signing right now, every bill he proposes, every appointment he makes for ambassadorships or cabinet people, these are all they're void. They'll be voidable because he does not have the qualifications to be president. You know, like today there's something that came out, if it's for real, about their questioning, saying Hillary Clinton. Oh, I think, Judicial Watch filed a lawsuit, according to what I read this morning, against Hillary Clinton, saying that according to the Constitution, she cannot be Secretary of State because the salary of Secretary of State was increased while she was a member of the Senate.
Right.
They're citing the Constitution. And last week or 2 weeks ago, the Congress, the senators were citing the Constitution when they were talking about whether or not to seat Burris from Illinois. But how come they can't cite the Constitution or agree with me on the Constitution that Barack Obama does not meet the qualifications for president? It really is outrageous. Our country is going to be in worst turmoil ever. The financial is nothing compared to the situation we're entering into at this point because he is not qualified to be president.
You're absolutely right. Let me just ask you, you mentioned Judicial Watch. Did they ever show any interest in your suit?
No, and that's why I just wrote back to the reporter who sent it to me. Maybe they'll go back to Judicial Watch. You know, it's been very selective, you know, like, and I don't know why people are afraid to question Barack Obama. I hope it's not because they're afraid to touch it because of a race issue, because, you know, supposedly he crossed the race lines. He attracted many, many whites across this country, or he would not have been elected or selected. It's really a disgrace. Everyone should make sure that, aside from buying the Globe, visit my website, ObamaCrimes.com, because we have the most up-to-date information. We have three cases pending right now. We're the most focused. There's other attorneys out there filing matters. Some of them are absurd and ridiculous. I really don't want to comment on them. We have to stay focused. The focus here is that Barack Obama or Barry Soturo is not who he says he is, and he's not qualified. Therefore, he's ineligible to be president. The other tangents that people are coming up with do not help the cause. And the cause here is to have him removed from office because he doesn't belong in office. And that's what I'm doing. Now, even though the U.S. Supreme Court knocked out my injunction the other day, last week, which I knew they would after they denied our petition for writ of certiorari without judgment, I know the next step, even though it's out there, we're still in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, and we filed our brief on January 20th, and now we're waiting for Biden and Obama to file a response brief, which is due probably, I think, this next week or two. In addition to that, we have the Hollister case. We sued on behalf of Gregory Hollister, a retired United States Air Force colonel, who has sued Barack, who has sued Barry Soturo, a.k.a. Barack Hussein Obama, stating that he's now retired, but he's on ready recall. If he's recalled by the president, does he accept the order because it's a valid order from a legitimate president, or does he deny the order because it's coming forth from an ineligible president? Now, interesting, there's a similar matter transpiring right now in Guantanamo. Obama has asked all the cases to be held up at this point, and one of the judges down there, one of the prosecutors there, is saying, no, he wants to continue on. I'm not sure the judge or the prosecutor. Someone says,
right,
basically defying the president, saying, no, well, I want to continue with the case. Hopefully it's someone who has read about us and wants us to step in. If I can, I will. The third case I have was filed back on November the 7th in federal court. I can't tell you what district. It's still under seal, but I'm going to be filing today, probably on Monday, a motion to unseal the case. And because certain things have happened, which gives me a right to have this case unsealed. And if it does, as soon as I hear about that, it'll be on our website and it'll be on, you know, your show, Webster, and whoever else's. So, and I'm hoping, because if we can unseal this particular case, it will really shift the burden. The case is captioned Berg versus Obama, but it'll really shift the whole burden to Obama to come forth with proof. So everyone out there, keep your fingers crossed for me.
Very good, Phil. A couple of things here. In the Globe, they invited you. They had an informal poll in the previous issue, right? You were the star of that one, too. That was the January 12th issue, right? Where was he born? What is he hiding? Is his inauguration illegal? And I say this because you are animating the heart and soul of a lot of this opposition. In the current issue, the Globe survey reports that you were invited to vote. Do you think he is a natural-born citizen or not a natural-born citizen? So for the Globe, is a natural-born citizen 45, not a natural-born citizen 2,356? So it's about 50-1. 50-1 that he's not qualified to be president. And I have a report here from a guy who walked into an automobile repair shop. And they asked him here in Rockville, Maryland, do you know Phil Berg, the guy who's suing Obama? So you're a folk hero, and that's at least something for the fight in favor of the Constitution. Back in a minute.
Okay.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C., and we're talking to our good friend Philip J. Berg, lawyer of Philadelphia, of course, taking the lead in court actions before the Supreme Court and other federal courts on the question of Obama's being disqualified, not a citizen and not natural born. So, Phil, as I was just saying, the poll is 50-1 that Obama is not qualified for the presidency, and people really in all walks of life. I've heard reports from Arkansas. People were well aware of you from auto repair shops in the Washington suburbs. I mean, this is now a drumbeat on the prairie, let's say.
No, it's amazing. Someone, where was I the other day? Oh, I know. Unfortunately, I had to take my mom to the hospital. She's out now, but the doctor in the emergency room, I happened to mention, you know, the Obama thing. Have you heard about natural born? He looks at me and says, you were on Savage. I heard you on Savage. I'm meeting a famous person. I said, I'm not sure I'm that famous, but it is amazing. It is spreading like wildfire across this country. That's why I ask all your listeners, go to my website, read it. Spread it to everyone on your address book. Tell them to read it and spread it on. Webster, I believe maybe 5, 10, 15 million people are aware of this, but we have to get it up to 50, 75, or 100 million people. When we get the bulk of the country aware of this situation, I know that the pressure will be on. Because this is really outrageous that Obama says president and he hasn't shown us a birth certificate, an item that every one of your listeners must show 3, 4, 5, 6 times in their lifetime. From baptism records to Little League to school to driver's license to passports. Different states have different regulations, but people have to show their passports. And here we have Barack Obama refusing to basically show anything. And he's a usurper. Also, while you're on my website, ObamaCrimes.com, if you can make a contribution, we're now into our, I think it's our fifth month of doing this and about to go into the sixth month. And I have promised all of you, I'm doing this for over the 305 million people in this country. I'm doing this for our forefathers. And more important, I'm doing this for the tens of thousands of men and women who have been, who have died and been maimed over the years protecting our Constitution. And what's going on now, it's a disgrace. So if you can make a contribution to see if we can identify with Webster's show, send us either $14 or $54, get a few friends together for $54, or send us $14 individually, then we'll know. And please, it's so important. This case is really, and not because I'm involved, but it turns out that I'm the director of the ship on this one. This case is probably one of the most significant cases in the history of our country, and right. we must follow this. We must follow it to the end. The Constitution must be followed.
Now, Phil, we're always looking for somebody who might have standing, and the one that you mentioned there I think was interesting. It's a military judge. As I understand it, this is it's a military officer. He's an army colonel or something like this, or a Navy commander, whatever he is. And he is one of the judges for the Guantanamo Bay inmates on these military trials under the previous regime. And Obama sent a communication to these people saying, please stop these for 120 days or something like this. And the guy said, no, I won't do it. Now,
right, I'm reading it right here. It's the judge is an Army Colonel James Pohl, P-O-H-L. And he is the one, he states that the public interest is in a speedy trial. And it's now being reviewed by the Pentagon and the White House. But he is basically defying the president, and I give him a lot of credit for doing that. He's doing that with the retired Colonel Gregory Hollister is doing as a retired, because on a active duty, he can be court-martialed. So we have to watch and see what happens.
Right. Well, maybe I would do everything possible to make sure that he is specifically informed that one of the tactics that he would have in his quiver is also to say, and by the way, you're not president of the United States, so don't tell me what to do.
Maybe he's doing that. And also, we will be following shortly another action of quo warranto, which is against the states that the person in office is not justified
right.
to be in that office. Now, I have a big mouth because I've been talking about this for a couple of weeks, and two other attorneys in the country have already filed a quo warranto. But ours will be right to the point. One of the attorneys filed it with like five or six other items involved. We're going to be very direct. We have, I'm very proud to say, since last August when I got involved, we have stayed very focused on here. We're going right down the line what we want. Other attorneys are claiming that this judge didn't do that or this talk show didn't do that or we should boycott a talk show host or boycott a product. Those points, ladies and gentlemen, they just take us away and hurt the main issue. The only issue here is Barack Obama qualified? Is he eligible to be president? If not, we must do everything we can to have him removed. These other issues, which might sound good when you hear them, just as far as I'm concerned, take the ball off of what the real goal is. And the real goal here is to find out if he's qualified or not, and I really believe he's not.
Now, the other person who would have had standing, I think, would have been Blagojevich. And Blagojevich was now railroaded, and I'd be interested to hear what you think of this, right? He was put on trial in front of the Illinois State Senate, but with no legal process, no witnesses, no nothing, no cross-examination. And if you look at the bill of impeachment, he's not impeached because of what Fitzgerald says about him, at least not only that, but they've got all these other points, right, that you disregarded the legislature on getting cheap prescriptions from Canada and stuff like this. And they cobbled that together into a bill of impeachment, but they never let him have witnesses. And it always occurred to me if he was going to be put on trial, he'd say, I called Obama. First question, what's your name? Second question, where were you born? Third question, what country are you a citizen of, dear Obama, right? Either deposition in the room or deposition in the White House, right, whatever the Paula Jones precedents are.
Well, we're gonna follow up on that, and I'm looking forward to on the case that's under seal. I think that'll give me the vehicle to proceed for extensive discovery, and I'm gonna ask to schedule his deposition. I can't wait to get him under oath, because that I think will be the downfall of him. You know, they're gonna oppose me. They're gonna say he can't, and he's too busy, and this and that.
They'll say you're not Paula Jones.
Right. Well, well, I think this case is a lot more significant.
Absolutely.
And I will tell them that I'm available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'll take his deposition at 3 a.m. or you know, at 8 o'clock at night, whatever he wants. And, if they want it, you know, at their law offices, you know, his attorney's office in Washington, fine. If they want it in his, the White House, I will be available. So I look forward to that. And maybe at that point, maybe the press will wake up and say, hey, you know, what's going on here?
Well, I hope they do. I mean, it really is amazing that the Globe has had coverage of this issue now, these two issues out of the four in January featuring you, and then also in previous issues, and of course the New York Times, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, Chicago Tribune.
The Globe has covered this in about five different issues.
Minimum.
Right now they're getting more and more coverage. I mean, this coverage is phenomenal. They have the front cover. In addition to the front cover, they have the inside centerfold story and two pages after this. They have four full pages discussing this, and they really go into it, and the article is an excellent article, and believe it or not, what they're saying in there is very, very true, and Barack Obama has a lot of explaining to do.
Absolutely right. Well, thank you very much, Phil. Again, that website is obamacrimes.com, and go there and give a contribution to keep this work going, because you can see this is not exactly a voice crying in the wilderness when you're constantly on the front page of what I think is the biggest supermarket tabloid with, 2 million copies, I think, they sell? Much more than the New York Times, that's for sure.
Well, that's good. And aside from the copies they sell, people just read it in line, and people see it, and they pick the story up. So
right.
We're moving up the ladder here, but everyone, go to my website. Spread it to everyone in your address book and ask them to spread it out. And I thank you, Webster, for being
here. And there's our theme song. We thank Phil Berg. Come back next week, as always. This has been World Crisis Radio. And we wish everyone best of luck until the next time. And fight the Wall Street hyenas. If you're not fighting finance capitalists, you're spinning your wheels. See you next week.